Happy British Open week, everyone. Stacked show for a big week. We got Frank Nobbo from Golf Channel, analyst. I'm sure you know who he is. He's one of the best in the business. We do about 30 minutes with him. He's got all kinds of phenomenal insight. He's at Carnoustie. He's been there for a few days. Oh, he also happened to finish top 20 there in 1999, so he knows a ton. We pick his brain. We get into it. We have some fun with him. We also got on this week's show, Randy. The introduction of Randy. We talk daily fantasy sports, fantasy golf. We get into some picks, the field, why you like certain players, why you don't, all kinds of good stuff. So a little bit of nuts and bolts for a few minutes. So something a little different. But then again, this is major championship week. We're pulling out all the stops. We're adding things to the show. Randy is on. You guys are going to love it. Reminder, we do two shows a week now. So Thursday, boom, you're going to get a whole nother show by the time it comes out. People will be playing. Tiger will be getting ready to tee off. He tees off around 10-something, I believe, Eastern time on Thursday morning. He's around 5 a.m. on Friday morning. So a lot of good stuff. We raised over $18,000 for the NYPD FDNY Widows and Children's Benefit Fund. That is the fundraiser that we did to give away the golf bag, the putters, the Shinnecock, and Augusta gear, all kinds of good stuff. We're going to be pulling names this week, so keep your eyes peeled on barstoolsports.com. On our handles, at foreplaypod, all that stuff. We're going to be pulling names, so people are going to find out what they won. I think over 900 people out there donated, which is amazing. Like I said, we raised over $18,000. You guys are awesome. And also, Riggs versus Granite Links. The latest video is up. Go to barstoolsports.com. Check that out, or go to our social channels. It's everywhere. We're going to be doing those every course we play. We're going to be doing a hole review, pick the signature hole, play it, see what I shoot, have some fun with it, show people the course. Do a little contest. It's a lot of good stuff, a lot of fun stuff, whatever. Go check it out. Major championship week, British Open, huge show. Let's do this.
I would look at Barstool all the time and look at, you know, their stuff that they post. Some of it's like absolutely stupid, but some of it's actually quite amusing and funny. Stuff like that is what we need to get people to, or attract people to the game of golf.
Nice to be here, boys. Congratulations on all that you're doing as mediocre as it is.
These newer, younger, hipper platforms like Barstool Sports.
Tiger's had three back surgeries. He's had one fusion.
We welcome in from Barstool Sports, Riggs and Trent. Guys, welcome to the show. Well, I've won
and lost again. Foreplay presented by BarstoolSports.com. Huge week. It is British Open week. We did go through a whole thing last year when the Claret Jug was here about we were going to call it the Open Championship.
Yes, we did.
I've kind of abandoned that.
Yeah, me too.
British Open, it just sounds better.
It's just, and it's easier in conversation. When you're talking about, it doesn't confuse anybody. You say the Open, you sound smarter and cooler, but people can also be like, what are we talking about right now?
It also can get confusing in different circles. Like if you're at Shinnecock or something and you say the Open, like people are thinking that's the U.S. Open.
Right, they're only focused on the tournament they're actually at.
Yeah, so like the Open is a little, you know, it's just a little bit too ambiguous. British Open, everybody knows what the fuck you're talking about when you say British Open.
Right, oh right? Yeah.
That can't be like tennis because that's like Wimbledon. You call it Wimbledon, all that. Yeah. This is British Open is golf. It's wind. You think like windy, rainy, firm, links. British Open, that's just what it is. So it's British Open week. As you guys heard in the intro, we've got Frank Nobbo on. Right up there with our guy, Brandel Chamblee.
Awesome guy.
Two of the best analysts in the game. Very different approach, obviously. So we did about 30 minutes with Frank. He's awesome. Fantastic. Knows his stuff. He's at Carnoustie. He's on site. He finished top 20 in 1999 at Carnoustie in the British Open. So he knows his stuff. Fantastic chat with him. We got a lot to get to, Trent Daddy. Mm-hmm. We have a lot to get to. We got some big Tiger stuff going on. We obviously have Carnoustie, Carnoustie, all of the cool drama around the history there. Van de Velde, his triple. We're going to get into all that. Oakmont, played Oakmont this past weekend.
Yes, you did.
I'm sure many people were following because, so this was, I didn't mean it this way. This became like the most hyped round of golf I've ever played.
It kind of got away from you in terms of the hype level?
Yeah, it got away from me. You know, you like to kind of sneak up on these rounds of golf, you know, like whatever little...
Well,
it'd be
weird if you didn't hype up playing Oakmont.
It's true.
It's not just another walk in the park.
It's true. While we were there, we were walking down one of the fairways with our hosts. Shout out to Tommy and Jack for having us down there. Myself and Lurch went down. We drove down to Pittsburgh. Sneaky long drive to Pittsburgh.
How long is it?
It's like almost 7 hours.
7 hours?
But it's right in that weird spot, right, where like
It was like 6.5-ish. It's right in that weird spot where like it's too short to fly, right? Paying like $500 or $600 to fly that's when you could drive it. Is not worth it. But also like it's not a drive to Boston, which is like 4.5, 5.
It's so funny. Growing up in the Midwest, you think about all these eastern coastal cities. You just think that they're all like 3 or 4 hours apart. 7 hours is way further than I thought for Pittsburgh.
So it was like 6.5 or 7. So, but we drove down. We did a Pirates game on Friday night, which was awesome.
That's a great stadium.
PNC Park. Everybody kept saying that. I didn't really know much about it. Not a huge baseball guy. Big golf guy. Not a huge baseball guy.
Right.
But everybody kept talking about how spectacular it is. We went in. It was awesome. I mean, the Three Rivers and all that, they're not kidding in Pittsburgh. I mean, there's fucking rivers everywhere. Yeah. There's so many bridges down
yeah.
there.
Oh, yeah.
It almost looks like they have so much steel, they didn't know what else to do, so they just built bridges everywhere.
We got all this extra steel.
And they painted all yellow, the whole town. It is a gorgeous city.
You got so into it, I saw you wearing a Pittsburgh Pirates hat.
Some guy who was one of the, what do you call it, like the marshals, I guess? Like
the people who seat you?
Tending the aisle and stuff like that.
Marshal.
I guess Marshall. Maybe I'm just so golf focused. The Marshall's the
let's
first.
Let's go with Marshall.
One of the Marshals, he in like the third or fourth inning, he came running down. He was like, "Riggs, big fan. I got you a couple hats. I already take a picture. I'm so glad you're here." I was like, "Hell yeah, dude."
Yeah.
And we were like 4 or 5 ices, I think is what they call them. The beers there.
Oh, okay. So are they slushy?
Localish beer. No.
They're just a regular beer.
Beer.
Oh.
That's like
icy makes me think of like the polar bear and the blue and the red.
That's what I thought when you got it, and then it wasn't as cold as that, so it was a little bit of a letdown.
Damn. But you got a free hat.
Delicious beer. Anyways, he gave me a couple hats, and we're a couple beers deep at that point. I was like, hell yeah, I'll put on a Pirates
hat. Dude, here's the thing. You catch me a couple beers deep, I'll wear just about anything.
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 So he gives me this free Pirates hat, which is one of the better logos. Awesome hat. The color scheme, all that. So we did the whole damn thing, get up, go to Oakmont. The first thing I want to say about Oakmont is, we walked down the fairway, talking about how is there a more iconic U.S. Open venue than Oakmont? I mean, maybe Pebble Beach because the views, maybe. But you start talking like Shinnecock, you start talking like Wingfoot, you start talking Marion, you start talking Oakmont. And it's like every time you kind of go through those different venues in your head, Oakmont kind of comes at the top, or at least it's in many people's minds top three, at least. Maybe top one. So you're getting all jacked up. And when you get into that mindset and you get that kind of opportunity, you have to dominate the pro shop.
You do.
Which I did. I always dominate the pro shop. Now, I posted a lot about this on my Instagram. The first thing that I do when I go into any pro shop is you look for the Peter Millar stuff.
It's the best stuff there is.
It's so... so comfortable, yet you look phenomenally classy, but it doesn't know about Peter Millar. I'm about to tell you all about it. They were founded in 2001. Very single cashmere sweater. It's grown into a premium American lifestyle brand. They got a wide range of casual sportswear, tailored menswear, luxury performance golf apparel. Again, we rock their stuff. I wear their stuff almost exclusively. Right now, we're wearing their performance shorts.
Yes.
Which, when it's this hot, it was like 92 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
At Oakmont,
yeah,
like 92 degrees, sweating. Thank God for my performance shorts. I'm wearing them right now. They are just the best, like breathable material, but also they hold everything. When you get some of those flimsy shorts sometimes, and you got like a scorecard holder in one pocket, tees in another, golf balls in another, some shorts just can't handle it.
Yes,
these are like the breathable comfort level. Plus, they can handle it. They are fantastic.
I wore their pants this weekend. I played Skyway in Jersey City, which was it's a little less heralded than Oakmont as a U.S. Open spot. It's a little 9-hole course over there. But I wore my Peter Millar pants, and they were fantastic.
Let me say this. I've heard Skyway is a great little 9-hole track.
It's awesome.
Over in like Jersey City.
Have you played it?
No.
You got to go over there.
But I get recommended it all the time.
I looked up on our on a Supreme Golf app, and I saw it, and I the shot why the hell not, and I played it, and it was a nice little track. It was really a lot of fun. You should head over there.
So look, the reason I love Peter Millar so much, the shorts, they offer so much comfort and style no matter what the hell I'm doing. They're moisture wicking. That's right, moisture wicking. Breathable, quick drying, plus they got a stretch waistband so they move with you, not against you. Makes them perfect for playing around the golf, for chores around the house, really anything, even going to work, whatever. Whatever you're doing, you need the Peter Millar stuff. Their performance shorts I'm wearing, like I said, are the most comfortable pair of shorts I've ever worn. I can say that about everything I've worn from Peter Millar because they're, but even their dress shirts. Their dress shirts are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
They're like that performance dress shirty type stuff.
Yes.
Awesome. Just awesome. Right now, here's what you guys can do. You head over to PeterMillar.com/4. That's Peter Millar, MILLAR.com/4. And you check out some of my Peter Millar favorites. Be sure to use my link, and you're going to receive a complimentary shipping and a free hat. That's right. You get complimentary shipping, free hat. You go to PeterMillar.com/4. That's PeterMillar.com/4. So I go into the pro shop. I find exactly what I want, which I got a Peter Millar belt,
mm-hmm.
and I got a Peter Millar vest. That's a reversible vest.
Oh,
oh my God. Wait till I. Well, first of all, I got the belt on right now. I don't know. Can you see it, Trent?
Yes, I can. Oh, that's a good looking belt.
It's like a light blue.
It is a light blue. It's like a North Carolina blue.
North Carolina blue, but it's got the green Oakmont logo. Anyway, Peter Millar is the best stuff. You got to get Peter Millar stuff. Dominate the pro shop. But then, go back to the hype. I had. What happened was I had mentioned it on radio to the cousins during break on Friday.
Yep.
That I was playing Oakmont. And then right before we went off the air, Cousin Murray goes, good luck at Oakmont, Riggs.
So the world knows
Cousin
now.
Riggs. I was like, thank you. And then a handful of people started tweeting at me, like, you playing Oakmont? So I was probably like, yep, I'm playing Oakmont. So then everybody got it. And like, there's no way you break 90. It's the hardest course in the hardest golf course in the world. You have no chance, blah, blah, blah. And I always do this thing against the stoolies.
Yes.
Where, you know, I like to bet around $100 or so total. And I do an over-under, and it's fun. It's very interactive. I'm super competitive.
You are.
So I like to play for something. And it's keeping your own score and all that. It's fun. So anyways, then we get to the bar that night. We're at the game. We're at the bar. And everybody's debating on the over-under. I met up with the stoolies that invited us down, who are members.
Yep.
And they're like, man, a couple people are saying the over-under should be like pretty high, like 87, 88. I'm like, well, I'm a 5 or 6 handicap. Like, what are you talking about? Should be 80. Like, I don't think you understand. The course is really hard. I was like, it's a fucking golf course. Like, how hard could it be? Then the assistant pro comes walking in, looks right at me, looks at my feet all the way up to my head, and he goes, 89.5. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, what are you talking about?
I walk around looking like an 89.5.
That's what I said. I walk like an 89.5. That's what I walk like. So then we put it out to Twitter, and people were all over the map. People were like 94.5. Other people were like, you'll break 80. It's only 6,500 yards from the men's tees. Back and forth and back and forth. So I settled on 85.5, which, to be honest with you, in my brain, I thought 84.5 was the right number.
Yeah.
But I wanted to give myself one stroke of leeway. So I was like, 85.5, done. That shouldn't be a problem, but then I got a little nervous. So then we get to Oakmont, and everyone online is like, Riggs, 85.5, like, you're a pretty good player. Like, you'd be under no problem. Every single person that worked at Oakmont was like, over. No chance. They're like, no chance.
Yeah.
Like, what? So we're going back and forth, meeting a bunch of people. A couple of the assistant pros are coming out. Like, Riggs, you heard about the numbers, 85.5. I was like, all right, asshole, whatever. Get over.
Thanks for having me, but fuck you.
Yeah, and we're like, we got there like 2 hours early, so there's a ton of hype. You know, we're at the range. The range is perfect. Phenomenal range. All that. It's Oakmont. We see the whole vista. We're like, Jesus Christ.
I'm picturing like media members following you around. Like, this guy writing stories like, this guy thinks he's going to get 85.5.
We walk over to the first tee, Trent, and you're already pretty nervous, right? You're playing Oakmont.
Of course.
All that. I'm talking. All of a sudden, like, 2 or 3 carts come over. There's like the teaching pros there. Really nice guy. Really super nice. But they come over. Like 4 or 5 of the assistant pros come over. There's like a starter. All of a sudden, we got like 10 people on the tee all standing there. One guy's filming me. First tee shot, I'm talking, it went 50 yards out of bounds.
Shut up.
Oh, I smoked it way right. Out of bounds right. You can miss 200 yards left, yeah. No problem. Out of bounds right. I'm like, oh, God. They're like, oh, it's a breakfast ball. I was like, yeah, okay. And I hit another one, ripped it right down the middle. I didn't count it as a breakfast ball. I just hit one OBS, hit my third off the tee. Ripped one on my second one, which felt good. Then I'm in the middle of the fairway. I'm like 105 yards out. I blade a wedge over the green into the worst fescue you've ever seen. Somehow hacked it out of there. Got up and down from there for a 7. So okay. I start with a triple. Parred 2. I'm not going to reveal exactly what I made on 3 because that's where we did the Riggs Verse video.
Yes.
We have to get approval from Oakmont to post that.
Oh, that's very official.
Very official. Kind of like that you have to get approval.
Yeah,
to
me
post
too.
It.
It makes it seem cooler.
But anyways. It's
I will say these people who are, you know, they're laughing at your 85.5, they have some skin in the game here. It's their golf course. So they want you to be like, this
totally.
Place is hard.
Totally.
It's not, Riggs can't just walk up in here and shoot a 77.
And Oakmont's not necessarily a place where they don't want people to walk off and being like, that was the most fun golf course ever. They want people to walk off and be like, I shot 20 strokes over my handicap.
Judging from your tweets, that is how you walked off. I believe you said you were devastated.
I was devastated.
It was tough. But that's good.
It was my own fault because I battled so hard, Trentini. I was like 6 over through 6 holes. And par 71, so I got to shoot 14 over or better. And I battled back. I ended up parring 14, 15, 16, and I'm on the 17th tee, and I'm 13 over. at the point.
Yep.
So I'm like, all right, if I just play the last two holes in one over par, done. I win. Everyone can suck it. 17 is just a reachable par four. It's like 280 or something, straight up the hill, but very treacherous green. I miss it way right. I'm in a horrible spot. I end up with like a 6-footer for par, miss it. So I'm like, all right, I'm on 18 tee at Oakmont. I need par.
Yeah.
Let's go. Hit a drive into the right rough. End up in not a terrible spot. I'm like 190 out. I don't have a great lie. Hack a 5-iron up like 30 yards short of the green. Back right pin. I'm like, all right, just chip it. Give yourself a putt.
Yep.
Blade my chip over the green. There's a bunch of people standing behind the 18th green watching.
Oh, yeah.
People in carts again. Everybody's like following my Instagram. How am I doing? I blade a chip over the fucking green. I'm like 2 feet, 3 feet over the green, but on a down slope.
Ugh.
To a down slope running away from me. Hit about as good a chip as you can hit. It runs like 60 feet past the hole.
Yep.
3-jack from there for a triple finish.
Oh, Riggsy.
Triple start, triple finish for an 88. I was so devastated. I was just so sad. I just wanted like a putt to do it.
Yeah.
I was like, give yourself a putt.
Nope.
At Oakmont. No. And we lost the fucking match. We were all square on 18T. Lost our match.
Oh,
so,
I bet you were just beside yourself.
I was sad. I was just a sad person. Got a couple transfusions, went back out, played the next nine or the front nine again. So it was a lovely experience, but it was very heartbreaking. Not the first guy to walk off heartbroken.
100%.
There is almost nothing worse in this world than owning a couch from hell. It's like a rite of passage. Too expensive, too heavy, too cheap, too worn. My buddy, my roommate Lurch, he's a giant, giant freak of a person. And I've said it before, but I've come home before and seen him without movement, without the ability to get up, because a bad couch ruined his back, just crushed him, just killed him. That was before. Now we have moved over to Burrow. We got this Burrow couch. It is the most comfortable thing I've ever experienced. We sleep on that more than we sleep in our beds because it's that good. Lazy Sundays every night after work. Boom. We basically fight over the couch. We come home, fight over the Burrow couch. It's that good. After all these years of suffering, you owe it to yourself to experience the comfort and quality of Burrow couch. It's B-U-R-R-O-W. Burrow brings style and comfort to a whole new level and ships to your door fast and free. That's right. They ship right to your door. Your relationship with your couch will never be the same. Burrow couches and sofas are ergonomically designed. That's right. You heard me. Ergonomically designed. They are so incredibly comfortable that, like I said, we just pretty much fall asleep all the time. That's the best sign in the world when you can just fall asleep on something. You get to customize your Burrow sofa to match your style by selecting color, size, armrest, height, all this good stuff. Ours has to be a little longer, a little higher, a little taller, a little higher armrest because of Lurch. Shipping is fast. It's free, unlike the rest of the furniture industry. Did you hear that? Shipping is fast and free. Oh, and they come in with a built-in USB charger. Boom, nothing better than that. You get to enjoy 30 days of coziness on your comfortable Burrow, risk-free, or try out Burrow at one of their partner showrooms today. And you guys are also going to get a fantastic deal. You get to customize your own Burrow and get $75 off of your order by going to burrow.com/4. That's burrow.com/4, F-O-R-E. You get $75 off of your purchase. That's burrow.com/4, burrow.com/4. Burrow makes the luxury couch for real life.
Carnoustie, British Open.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for the British Open, Trent Daddy.
I think everybody is. We're getting all these pictures now, and you blogged it yesterday where people are hitting 500-yard drives. It's so baked out.
People are hitting it into the burn in front of the green on 18, which is 457 yards away. Into the burn. That means it's got a little bit of momentum. The course, it's just yellow. The course is
I saw a picture earlier that somebody tweeted out that it just looked like sand everywhere. Mm-hmm. It looked like a desert, which is what we want.
This is exactly what you want. Frank Nablo talks about it at pretty good length, but he says this is probably the driest British Open he's ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
This is how it's supposed to play. It's supposed to be firm, fast. I wrote in the blog that what people don't understand out there is that on this type of terrain, when it's this dry, there's nothing to stop the golf ball.
No.
The only thing that could stop it is bad stuff.
Right.
Like a bunker or fescue or water. Like, that's it. That's the only thing that can really stop the golf ball, unless you play incredibly strategically and, like, kind of plot your ball around. But even then, I mean, you're going to see, and we've seen it many times over again, I believe Greg Norman, famously, I can't remember which course that was at, but on the 18th hole, he ripped like a 3-wood or something and hit it into a fairway bunker on the right hand side and was like, I'd been 20 or 30 yards short of that bunker all week. It's just Lynx golf. Adam Scott did it when he blew his lead on the 18th hole, where you're going to see guys that don't believe they can reach certain bunkers, and their balls end up in bunkers because you just catch a slope the wrong way or whatnot, and it makes this place incredibly tough, which is so awesome. This is the Vandeveld 99. Needed a double or better on the 18th hole at Carnoustie. Made triple. Made like a seven-footer for triple to get into a playoff. They were six over par that year is what got them into a playoff. Sergio Garcia, our friend Padraig Harrington, the two of them went into a playoff in 2007, I believe it was, when Sergio had a big par putt to win the British Open, his first major ever in 2007. He had like a 10-foot little left to rider. That was when he was wearing like his puke green shirt. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Disgusting green shirt. That lipped out my house. I've said this story before. My house went crazy. We were watching on two different TVs. Everybody started erupting because that was like the peak of fuck Sergio Garcia.
Oh, the good old days when you used to actually hate Sergio. I miss those days.
That was when I used to hate Sergio. Now I like him. Things change.
Sad.
But the British Open, man, it's very unique. It's very different. It's it could be the most fun golf to watch of the entire year. The other beauty of it is that the tee times are crazy.
Crazy.
So like what I get really jacked up about is you get to wake up, get a breakfast sandwich, get a coffee, try to cure a little hangover or whatever, watch major championship golf till like 4 or 5, go out and play golf. Then you
it's
go
great.
Play like a twilight round of golf. It's the best. Tiger tees off, I saw, 10:21 on Thursday and then 5:20 a.m. Eastern time on Friday.
Those are great times.
Awesome times.
You can just wake up both days and be like, oh, shit, Tiger's playing.
Exactly. So you get up a couple hours earlier on Friday, watch Tiger, and it's a summer Friday, so like nothing's that serious.
Never.
And then Thursday morning, right in the office, you're chilling, 10:20, watch Tiger all day at the office. Next thing you know, when he's done, you're pretty much done. Get the hell out of there.
Boom.
Speaking of Tiger, we got some serious Tiger stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
The first is this video. This guy, by the way, this guy on Twitter.
I believe his name is Donald.
Donald?
Yes.
He's been sitting on this video, I think, for like 2 months.
Yeah, we don't know where it's from, when he said this, but this video comes out, and it's as soon as I saw it, I stood up and said, this is viral. That's a viral video. Tiger Woods saying if the competitors are freaked out by or intimidated, then that's their fucking issue.
So let's play the clip.
I can't control you. The only thing I can control is me. Now, if I do this more efficiently than you, if you get intimidated, that's your own fucking issue.
So, I mean, the fact that this guy sat on this video, I saw a bunch of journalists were responding, being like, hello, can you please confirm the date of this? Can we use it with credit and all the dumbass journalistic stuff? I think he said that it was from like some Tiger Jam event in May. So this thing's at least a couple months old.
Yeah.
And this guy's just been sitting on this, and he said, I was waiting for a major championship to tweet it out.
You nailed it, bud.
Why do you think he didn't tweet it out during the U.S. Open?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. He's just like,
maybe
he
just forgot. Maybe he's like, fuck.
You don't forget. If I have this video and nobody else has it, I think about it every single day. Is today I'm going to do it? Is today I'm going to do it?
And Donald, I went through his timeline too, and he had like during the U.S. Open, he had a great Matt Parziali tweet where he tweeted out for the brand, and it was the Fox Sports coverage, and you could see the Barstool head cover and Parziali really clearly right in the frame of the picture. And he tweeted that. I retweeted it. So, like, he's been in the mix.
And if you're Donald, how do you know nobody else has this video? He's just, all right, I got this. Now I'm going to sit on. I am the only. He definitely wasn't the only guy there, obviously. No. Tiger was given, like, a seminar.
Now he's going crazy viral. This, Tiger trying to, like, stop himself, too. It's almost like he stopped himself thinking, like, he might be at a children's clinic or a clinic for the children.
Yeah.
And then realized this is a Tiger Jam thing, which I think is more adults.
Yeah.
And then just said it anyways. And everybody starts laughing. But that. That clip.
Can I tell you, I felt like a little, I felt voyeuristic watching that video. The way he catches himself, it's like, oh, he's at an event that he's not sure what he can say. And then our guy Donald is up there just like, all right, I'm going to get this on video. I just felt a little like, I don't want to say dirty, but I was like, oh man, that's what made the clip that much better, where Tiger tries to catch himself.
Think about how many times Donald drunkenly at the bar has shown this to his buddies. Been like, look at what I fucking captured Tiger saying. I mean, his quote was just unbelievable. That's their fucking issue. That's what he said.
Yeah.
That's your fucking issue. Can't believe he said that.
Tiger doesn't speak like that in public.
Never. But you always hear that he speaks like that privately.
But at an event like that, he's got to think that somebody's either taping this or a guy like Donald is in the crowd with his phone, and he got so riled up about competitors being intimidated, and he doesn't care. He cares so little about that he just dropped an F-bomb.
Oh, it was so good. And then the other Tiger news we got to talk about, Hank Haney. Also our friend. We've had him on the show here.
We have a lot of friends.
Yeah, tons of friends. I mean, we're just a friendly show.
We are.
Golf, friends, all that kind of stuff. Hank Haney has made his pick for the British Open at Carnoustie. Let's hear it in Hank's own words here.
ready to be out there on a limb right here. Actually, I don't think I'm really out there on a limb. I said he was going to win this year, and this is it right here. This is it. Carnoustie. I'm not waiting till Wednesday. I'm on Tiger Woods right now. Because the problem Tiger has is you know, everybody can sugarcoat it all they want. But he's taken too many penalty strokes. It's just the bottom line. And when he has to hit drivers all over the place, you know, it's going to be tough. But at the Open Championship, playing like it's going to play this year, to me, this is where experience matters the most. And Tiger Woods has more experience winning in these conditions than any other player. And I think that's why he's going to win the Open Championship.
All right, now look, if there's one person who knows Tiger's game better than anybody, it's Hank Haney.
It's Hank Haney.
As soon as I saw this, I placed money on Tiger to win.
Which made you more excited, the Tiger Jam clip or the Hank Haney clip?
The Tiger Jam clip.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I just...
that's him, more visceral.
Yeah.
He's like, that's our fucking issue.
Yeah, right. The fact that he said that was just like... The fact that he confirmed that in his brain all along, he's always known that he's intimidating to other people.
Yeah.
And that's their fucking issue is like, that's just so cool to have that.
Because it's one of those things that you know that he knows, but he never says it, so you don't totally know. You just think he's a robot who's just right. Plowing through golfers in tournaments. And then he's just like, oh, yeah, I know that I'm like the scariest dude to ever walk a golf course.
The other thing I will say about the Haney clip that gets me excited, though, is, I mean, I guess I do this with everything positive that someone says about Tiger, but I'm doing it again, is that everything he said made me take like this mental journey to agreement. Like, oh, yeah, that's a really good point, Hank. Like, and he was like, well, look, I have said all along that he's going to win again this year. And if he's going to win again this year, you have to look at the most likely places for him to win. And therefore, the conditions at the British Open, when they're so firm and fast, he has as big of an advantage against the field here as he does anywhere. Therefore, if he's going to win, it must be at Carnoustie. So he's going to win the British Open. I was like,
yep,
that's flawless. Like,
Hank Haney said on this very podcast that he thought Tiger was going to win another major.
Yep.
And this, he thinks this is the one.
I mean, the way that he said it in that clip, I was like, that is airtight. How does Tiger not win at this point? It's just.
I mean, if Hank Haney's saying, and Nabilo, who you'll hear later, said that, well, Hank Haney once said that Tiger had the yips too. That just really shows how far we've come.
We've come so far.
We've come in such a short period of time, it seems.
And Hank's not just on Tiger's dick all the time. He's been honest all along. He's like, oh, now he's got the yips. And he's
good
like,
point.
Oh, now he's going to win the British Open.
Unbiased party.
Unbiased party. So awesome news to hear, a lot of hype, a lot of excitement into going into this British Open. And there's no better person to speak to when you've got all this kind of hype, major championship week, than one of the lead analysts, one of the top analysts in all of the game. Mm-hmm. Golf Channel, you know him, you've seen him. He's got a great salt and pepper game, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
One of the best.
Yeah.
One of the best in the business. Frank Nabilo. We go for about 30 minutes. Very insightful, very fun stuff from Frank. Enjoy this interview with Frank Nabilo. All right. We are now joined by a very special guest. I'm sure everybody in the golf world is very, very familiar with Frank Nabilo. He is a 14-time winner around the world, 2-time assistant captain for the President's Cup teams, the international teams, and, of course, the lead analyst, one of the lead analysts for Golf Channel. Catch him all week on Golf Channel's Live from the Open Championship. But, Frank, first of all, thanks for joining us. I know you're out in at Carnoustie right now. How's everything out there going?
It's well, first of all, thanks for having me on, guys. I'm trying to do you guys justice. I'm literally sitting on what I consider a bar stool. So looking outside I'm looking at the 18th green at Carnoustie. This is our set. We were just taping an earlier show. But, yeah, course looks fantastic. Yeah, I've yet to see an Open Championship this dry, to be honest. I've played a bunch of them, been over here a bunch of times, and I've never seen it this parched and this dry. But still, the golf course is in great condition.
Frank, that is an incredible touch that you're sitting on a bar stool just for us to do
the
show.
Yeah, it's the least I could do, right?
We appreciate it. So Carnoustie, a lot of people might not know this. I believe you finished tied for 18th there in 1999. So you know the golf course Well, it's in very dry condition. Everybody keeps talking about it. The driest that you've seen is phenomenal news for us. What kind of added challenges is that going to bring, the fact that Scotland's had such a dry summer?
Well, guys, you know, it's a third dimension. Whether you play golf on the European Tour or the PGA Tour, or even really around the world now, so many of the golf courses that they play in this sort of new generation of golf are American style. That's through the air. So I know people think links golf, you've got to run it along the ground. That's not always the case, because the softest and most consistent part of the golf course is the greens. And these greens here are relatively slow, and they're also, you know, relatively flat. So if you do hit fairways, you actually always have the option, which is what Tom Watson found here all the way back in 1975, simply to pitch the ball in the middle of the green, and you get the most predictable result. The problem comes when you start to stray a little bit. These fairways are only 26 yards wide. You start missing that, then really you realize you can't hold the green. That's when you have to start looking at all these humps and hollows and bunkers. They call them pot bunkers here for a reason. Basically, in 200-300 years ago, they just got a shovel, dug a hole, put some of that turf around the edge, and that's how you got a bunker. So when it goes into a bunker, it goes down deep, and they're more hazards than probably the water in America. They have to be avoided here. You know, they're almost penalty shots, but. The guys learn. They learn the game quickly. They learn the golf course quickly. But you know, that bounce and roll is just—it's unpredictable. So it's still going to reward people on the fairway. But some of the younger guys are going to try and overpower the course. They've already talked about that.
So we had Colin Montgomery on the show a few weeks ago, and we talked about the different venues over in the UK for the Open Championship. He said he believes that Carnoustie is two strokes tougher than any other course on the Rota by each round, two strokes each round tougher. What makes Carnoustie so difficult and so much more difficult than some of the other tracks?
Yeah, I probably would have agreed with that a few years ago with Monty on that. I think Royal St. George's might actually be a little tougher. But because of the distance the guys now hit the golf ball, you know, some of these bunkers can be taken out of play. But you know, to answer your question, what makes it difficult is the bunkering. I think they have the best bunkering on the Rota. And you know, if you can imagine a typical PGA Tour event, you see fairways and you see bunkers that are in the rough. So therefore, if you miss a fairway, you're either in the rough or in a bunker. Here, the bunkers are actually part of the fairways here. You have to change your line depending on the wind. So there'll be a bunker left side of the fairway, right side of the fairway. So they actually shrink the fairways. And because they're in play, you know, your shot selection, what club you hit off the tee, it becomes a much tougher driving course. So in normal conditions, this would be the hardest driving course on the Open Championship Rota, and I think that's why Monty would have gone with the fact that it plays about two shots harder. But because it's so dry, and because of the fact the guys actually do hit it further, some of the immediate hazards can be taken out if you're a Dustin Johnson or John Rahm, and I think that's going to be their strategy. And then if it works out, then they will shoot low, not as low as some of the others, but they will find a way to take this place apart.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough. I got over there for the first time last summer, and I was stunned at how much you can look right down the middle of the fairway and see absolutely nothing and think, okay, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
And then you walk out there, and it's just death everywhere.
It is, yeah. And you're right. That's the visual. And that's normally when – I remember when I first played links golf over here at a place called Port Marnock, which is an island. And, you know, I played with Tom Weisskopf, who was one of my heroes. And he was aiming the ball right and left, and I was trying to aim straight, and you know, I had no chance really. And in the end, I asked him, because you know, he was a person that I admired. I said, "Well, you know, how the hell do you play links golf?" And he just said, "Look, you know, the wind's coming from the right, so aim it right. Wind's coming from the left, aim it left. It's dry, aim it short." And he just said, "You just have to predict, or at least try and imagine what's going to happen once the ball hits the ground." And I said, "Are you trying to say it's that simple?" He said, "I didn't say it's simple." He said, "But you just have to allow for that extra dimension." But you're right, you get blind shots, so you've got to imagine where that ball's going to land. So it really does play tricks with your mind's eye, but that's also the beauty of it.
So, you know, we've been replaying, and the Golf Channel's been replaying the Vandeveld from 99 and all the, you know, all the chaos and all the commotion from this course and the history that it's brought. You know, you said Royal St. George is maybe now the toughest on the entire Rota, but I think there's probably very little dispute that 15, 16, 17, and 18 at Carnoustie is the toughest four-hole finish maybe the entire world. Is there a way you could walk us through sort of those four holes and what these guys are going to have to face?
You've done your homework, haven't you?
Well, you know, I try to be ready to go.
Big on homework. Riggs does tons
of homework.
Huge
homework guy.
No, you're right on the money. Yeah, you stand on 15. Well, first of all, you come off the easiest hole in the golf course, which should be 14 is a slight dogleg left par 5. So that's, you know, you really are like, you know, salivating thing. Well, if I can make 4 or 3 there, then that sets me up. And then 15 is a hole that bends a little to the left, par 4, with 2 wonderful bunkers down the right side. And really, you could, there's 100 strategies you could play down there. You could try and hit driver, and I think Tommy Fleetwood, who shot 63 here in a Dunhill Links, just had a flick with a wedge in here. But normally, those bunkers are in perfect place. They're about 270, 290 yards off the tee down the right. Rough on the left's not very good. So it's so hard just to try and find that fairway. And then goes back to one of those blind second shots. You only see the top half of the flag, plus the first 20 or 30 yards short of the green's all downhill. So if you hit the fairway, you can fly it on the green. If you miss the rough, now you have to judge exactly how much that ball's going to sprint onto the green. And then if you go long, it rolls all the way over the back and probably goes a good 10 or 15 feet, you know, 10 or 15 yards past. So that's 15. You get to 16, which is it's just a beast of a par 3. It can play 260 yards. If it plays into the breeze, even these guys might hit 3-wood. And if it plays down breeze, then all of a sudden you have to worry about where you land. Once again, if you land at 20 or 30 yards short, it shrinks into about a 5-yard gap because the bit in front of the green, there's a little pot bunker on the left that's 10 yards short. But it all kicks to the right, which kicks to the right greenside bunker. It's a two-tiered green. And the green's only, I think I paced it today, it was 15 yards wide. So that's a beast of a par 3. So you're just hoping somehow to hang on and maybe make 3. And then if you played 16 downbreeze, then you turn around into 17, which has the Barry Byrne that just, I mean, it looks like a drunken snake the way it meanders its way across the hole. And there's like a 260-yard run out down the left side and a 280-yard run out down the right as the Barry Byrne comes back across. So you don't know, you got to lay up, and it's a long hole. And I saw Paul Casey today. Paul Casey hit 2 3 irons. His first 3 iron went 260 yards, 250 yards, and he had the same distance in. So just finding the fairway. You now also have a second shot where you can't quite see the putting surface. Left is terrible. And then right, there's this enormous bunker that has a mound to it. And it just sits there. You get up there, and the green looks big enough, but from the middle of the fairway, it's terrible. That's providing you miss Barry Byrne. So, you know, you finally wipe your brow, you stand on 18, and you remember what Vandeveld did. Johnny Miller screwed it up back in 75 as well. Everybody screwed this hole up. And there's out of bounds all the way down the left. And the last thing you want to see on the last hole is the definitive out of bounds. And then, so what do? The out of bounds on the left, they put 2 bunkers perfectly placed on the right. So if you, you know, for the weak of heart like myself, you start looking at those bunkers, they cause more problems. And then on top of that is the burn that Vandeveld went into. And if you miss that, there's out of bounds again that's on the left side and behind the screen. So, yeah, it's an out, I mean, I'd rather pull teeth, seriously, than make 4 there to win. So you're actually right. The last 4 holes, get through that. Yeah, I don't know. Take a couple of Valium. That's what you're going to need.
That's what you're going to need. It is amazing because everybody, you know, 18 is sort of the big ticket item with all the history and the Vandeveld and all that. And, you know, even Sergio missing that putt in 07. But 17, I was watching, again, you guys had that replay going on the other day and in the 3-man playoff from 99. And I think that the shortest distance one of the guys had in the playoff was like 221 or something like that. And that's after they hit a really good drive.
Yeah, you can't shorten it. You know, Nicklaus apparently years ago tried to hit driver across there. That was with a small ball, which, you know, the big ball probably goes as far now anyway. But, there's nothing you can do. So you have to rein it in. And that's the word. You know, players hate being reined in on a long hole. You're accepting 200 yards in plus, and that means you're giving in. You don't want to give in to the golf course. And, you know, these guys are trained to make birdies. So putting them in a defensive frame on a strong hole, that's not what they like.
So we have to ask you, Frank, is there anybody on the planet that's better at rolling balls on greens than you are?
Man, I have no equal on that. Yeah, that's when you get to my age and you're, I'm a rheumatoid arthritis sufferer and all that, I'm restricted to very, very soft duties. Yeah, so rolling golf balls is about it. You know, my wife said that's all I'm good for these days.
Have you ever had any big misses on the, because I believe it's the tee to green with Frank Nobilo, and have you ever had any big misses where you sort of went to roll a ball and it just kind of stopped in a pretty good spot and you were like, well, that didn't work?
Yeah, no. Actually, I used to try and, believe it or not, and this is the truth, you know, I used to try and chip and hit a few shots. But, you know, you guys, you know, you get the luxury of a retake sometimes because you might muff the intro or what you're talking about. You know, you try and do these on the fly. And so, invariably, if I see a really hard shot, and I remember doing one at the Atlanta Athletic Club, Tiger Woods had hit a thinner bunker shot and it went clean across into the lake on the other side. So I had to do the equivalent of a tee to green, which was come down off the set in a suit and tie. And they said, hey, just replay Tiger Woods and tell us how hard the shot was. So all I do is take the jacket off. I grab somebody else's wedge. It's not mine. I flick it out and it goes to 2 feet. And I go, we can't use it. And I go, well, why not? I said, I've just, you know, number one, I haven't practiced for a while. I've just embarrassed the best player in the world. So, you know, you have to be cognizant when you've got 3 or 4 tries sometimes. If it is a hard shot, like if I hit one and it comes up 15 feet short because I thought it was fast, really that's the one you should use. And a lot of people don't like to use the truth because if you think it's fast, then obviously the player is going to see the same thing. So I try and point out the mistakes that they would see. In other words, you think this mound would kick it forward, so you play it to kick it forward, and it doesn't. So that's what you would say in the tee to green. It looks like the ball's going to kick forward, but look, it doesn't. And other, you know, that's where, you know, the best compliment is when a player says, hey, I made the same mistake. So you're trying to get, you know, I love the way these guys play these days. You know, I try and get into their heads a little bit, and I know I can't play some of the shots that they hit, but you can at least try and replicate or show the viewer the challenges they have, and that's the goal of it.
Yeah, and it's it's great because it's so difficult on TV to convey, you know, especially in the middle of a round when they don't have a ton of time. The guys are, you know, they're moving through pretty quickly, and they just don't have enough time to sort of convey all the different challenges, the slopes, the undulations on greens. And on fairways, everybody talks about it at Augusta, but it's sort of everywhere. They just don't come through on TV unless you really make a serious, concerted effort to show it. So I think that it can come off on TV like everybody just has the same bunker shot in every bunker shot that they're in, and that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And that's, you know, that's the one disadvantage that they're still trying to figure out on our sport. You know, like a tennis match, we just had, you know, Wimbledon's been great. You see two people, they play at the same time, they're playing each other, so we know it's weakness against strength or strength against weakness, whichever way you want to look at it. You know, for golf, really for the first 3 days, you know, it's like a horse race. They're all trying to get in position. They play at different times. The wind might be up, it might have rained. They never get the same conditions. Then finally, we get them together on Sunday, and we still don't really know who's playing the best. We can look at some stats and figure it out, but they might have played in different conditions. So it's very hard for us to level the playing field and try and get a fair assimilation of exactly how everybody's playing. But that's also what makes our game so good. But it's that's why it's hard to get right too, though.
It's very difficult. You guys do a great job bringing a lot of color to it. I want to talk about the field a little bit now. We had it just came across on Twitter. We saw it that Hank Haney has picked Tiger Woods to win this week. Talk a little bit about
he's already laughing.
Your thoughts on Tiger and if you're willing to go that far with Tiger this week.
Well, Hank said he had the yips a couple of years ago, right? So, and then he's picking them now. That's great. Hopefully they've mended their fences because, you know, they were a pretty good duo when they were together. 4 of the last 7 players that have won the Open Championship have been in their 40s. So if you want to have, if you want to get onto the Tiger Woods ride, and then there's a lot of people that will, is the oldest average winner of a major championship by far comes out of the Open Championship. I think the average age you take them all in over the last 30 or 40 years is 36, but 4 of the last 7 have been in their 40s. So, you know, if you're a Mickelson, Stenson, Tiger Woods type guy, you know that this course can do that. And there's basically 3 reasons why. Number one is the greens are slower, which is easier on the nerves and a little flatter. So, you know, really you don't feel as fragile on the greens. And number 2, the bounce and the roll is another variable. And then the 3rd one is you don't really have the forced carries in America when you're coming to carry a lake or at Augusta, you're flying it over, you know, the Brace Creek at 13, and then at 15, for example, same thing. You need a high, soft landing shot. So the longer hitter or someone hitting a shorter club will always have an advantage. Here, the avenues of most of the fronts of the greens are all exposed, so you get to choose the shot. So it really does come down to a little bit of experience and just hard nose, you know, put your nose to the grindstone. So, you know, Tiger Woods has the bit between the ears. You know, I love tennis as well. Djokovic proved that last week. You know, you can't teach what those people have in their head. But Djokovic had to fight through confidence last week and did it, especially against Nadal. That's the biggest thing in front of Tiger Woods this week, is fighting his own demons more than anything. And I think if he were to all of a sudden get a little bit of self-belief and gets off to a good start, yeah, then that's when he's dangerous. I mean, there's a reason why nobody beat him when he was in front.
Yeah, it's been a little bizarre in that, you know, he's had these great runs at the Valspar, even at the
Bay Hill,
the National, a couple weeks ago and all that. But then in the majors, he's sort of, you know, hasn't really been there and had slow starts and all that. So it'll be interesting to watch, as always. I'm curious what you think about Dustin Johnson, number one in the world. He obviously, you know, length is his big advantage. But I'm wondering if, you know, with how baked out the whole thing is, does that almost sort of negate his length advantage a little bit? Or what are our thoughts on DJ this week?
Yeah, well, DJ, I think he's going to opt for that strategy. It's Brooks Koepka, who beat him at Shinnecock, is also going to do. They're going to try and take out some of the bunkers on the bigger holes. There's only two par fives here. There's only three par threes. So that certainly can work, providing the, you know, I'm not saying they have to hit fairways, but, you know, if they're straight enough so that they don't get into some gorse or some serious damage, they will go with short clubs. And this will not play like 7,400 yards, which it is. It'll play like a relatively short golf course, especially for them. And DJ, as we know, is probably the best long driver in the game. And also with what happened at Shinnecock, where I think if I was Dustin Johnson, I would be annoyed with what happened in the weekend. Not through his own play, but just purely that they tweaked the golf course on him. So I think he has a point to prove. And so that's good motivation for him. And he's played here. They have an event over here called the Dunhill Links. It's like the AT&T that they have in Pebble Beach. They've had it for 15 years. Three golf courses, there's King's Barnes, St. Andrews, and there's Carnoustie. So the guys that play that, they get experience here. Dustin Johnson's played in that event, so Dustin Johnson's played here. And that will serve him in good stead. You need experience here.
Yeah, the Dunhill Links is, especially for American fans that don't get to see Links golf outside of one or two events a year, it is one of the coolest events to watch. I believe, is it early fall or late summer usually?
It's October. Yeah, it actually used to be, the event originally was called the Dunhill Cup, which was, you know, I played in like 14 times. It was three players from 16 countries. So it was almost like a you know, nation against nation type thing. And it was a great event, and that was always at St. Andrews. And then the Dunhill, the sponsor, then decided to turn it into like an AT&T. And that's been going in that format for 5 years. They use three golf courses and then finish up again on St. Andrews. And October here, believe it or not, even though it's cooler, it's normally a little less windy. You don't have the, you know, it's not light till 10 o'clock at night. But yeah, you get to play three great links courses. And that's why the amateurs love it. All the pros that come here, they get to play three great courses, normally with friends as well.
Yeah, it is a great event. Everybody should keep their eyes peeled for that one later this year.
Frank, so you mentioned that my co-host Riggs, he did his homework. He does a lot of homework. I was doing a little bit before here, and I was reading your Wikipedia, and it says here that you're the great-grandson of an Italian pirate. Can you shed some light on that part of your family tree?
Oh, yeah. Everything you read is the truth, right?
I really hope that one's true.
No, well, it's not great. Yeah, it's like great. For example, the Soccer World Cup that was on, I was, you know, rooting for Croatia because both my grandparents originally come from what was Yugoslavia. They came just before the Second World War. They went to New Zealand. But before that, my dad's side, they originally come from Italy. And I think, you know, piracy was, I don't know, I mean, what's that? It's like an upmarket thief in those days. That's probably all it was. And they just sailed away. They got out of southern Italy and finished up in Yugoslavia. Yeah, so it's actually true. That doesn't mean that it's stayed in the genes. You know, I try not to steal all my information. But, you know, I do the best I can. Yeah, it's in the blood, though. Yeah, I've lived, you know, I brought up in New Zealand. I lived in London for 10 years. Now I lived in Florida for 20 years. So I can never sort of stay put. So I blame my heritage. Yeah.
If I were you, I would break that out late night at the bar. I would be like, a little fact about myself. I'm the descendant of an Italian pirate, and blow people's minds.
I've given up taking the parrot around, you know? The parrot tells better jokes than I do.
So usually, you know, you're talking about or you're breaking down other people's highlights. We're going to let you talk about one of your own. We got to hear about the 70-footer you made, and I believe the 1998 President's Cup.
Yeah, that's a long story. Well, I'll try and shorten it up. I got hit in the head about a month before with a golf ball. I had 30 stitches. It was just before the PGA Championship. So I couldn't play for a little while. And in the end, I finished up 11th man. I got picked by Peter Thompson, who sadly passed away this year. So he thought I liked my fellow New Zealander, it was Greg Turner. So he also picked him with the two picks. And an Australian picking two Kiwis didn't go down that well. And it was the third President's Cup that I'd played, and we drew Mark O'Meara and David Duval. Duval had got to number one in the world, and O'Meara had won two major championships that year, if you can remember. So we give them an alternate shot, and you know, I was a little nervous, struggling in practice. Peter Thompson, their captain, had helped us, and anyway, lo and behold, we were one up playing 18, an alternate shot, and I didn't realize how nervous my partner was. I was aware of how nervous I was, and I talked him into playing the wrong club. His caddy couldn't make up his mind. His caddy's caddying for Retief Houston, actually. And so anyway, he hits 8-iron instead of 9, and he hits it like 50 feet past the flag. Royal Melbourne's got greens like Augusta. They're ridiculous. And so anyway, now he's pissed off at me. He really is. He's like, you know, it's my fault. I made a great swing. I'm like, yeah, what am I going to do? Then Duval stuffs it. He hits it to 2 feet. So basically, it's a gimme three. The match is going to be tied. And we were the first match that day on the opening day. So my caddy, whose name is Anthony Knight, his nickname was Ant-Man for a lot of different things that he did in his life. And he'd caddied for a guy called Wayne Riley, who'd won the Australian Open at Royal Melbourne and made a putt from the back of the green. So as we're walking up, he said, no, don't worry about it, boss. He said, Wayne Riley made this putt. I'm like, what a lot of BS, basically. So he goes, so we go, and he's arguing. So I tell you, he did. It breaks left or breaks right or whatever it was. And I'm like, he said he did. You check it afterwards. So we start talking about that. I start laughing, which was great. That was the best thing. And then lo and behold, I hit it. And it's going down there, and I'm thinking, whatever. And with about 10 feet out, it's online and banging. And it was Phil Mickelson jump at Augusta times 5. I actually got my feet off the ground.
That's huge.
And then I remember giving a high five. I nearly took my arm and my shoulder out, and I knocked my fellow partner, Greg. I knocked him about 4 feet. Yeah, I was ecstatic. And then that started a roll. Craig Parry was the group behind us. He chipped in on 18, and it's still to this day the only time that the international teams beat the Americans in the President's Cup. So it was one of the best teams I ever played in. I missed those events. But yeah, it did happen. It wasn't a myth.
That's great. Not everybody gets to say they knocked in a clutch 70-footer to win a match, so that's awesome. So you're obviously a New Zealand guy. What if someone's going to go to New Zealand, what courses do they have to play?
Probably Cape Kidnappers. Julian Robinson, the American financier, built that, and also Cary Cliffs. Cary Cliffs and Cape Kidnappers, too. They're both in the North Island, but if you're going to go to New Zealand, you have to spend time in the South Island. I'm a North Island boy. I was a city boy from Auckland, but I might be parochial, but the South Island is the most beautiful place in the world. It's a collection of everything. I love living in America. You got to go to Colorado. You go to Aspen, you go to the Grand Canyon, you know, you go to the Great Lakes. You put them all together in a place the same size as Great Britain, and that's pretty much what New Zealand is. So it's a collection of all these marvelous things in the world in a small country. And if ever you go to New Zealand, you drive yourself, because you just want to stop every 20 or 30 miles because the topography changes, and just take your camera. And people are laid back. I mean, they don't care that much about a lot of things. They grow up, you know, they realize they're lucky there, and it's beautiful. That it's one of the hardest things about being a professional golfer was that I had to, sail away from New Zealand and live elsewhere.
Yeah, I will say, even if you just go Google like New Zealand and just look at the images, it looks outrageously beautiful.
Yeah, even a bad photographer takes good pictures there. Yeah.
So you've been in the broadcasting game for quite a while now. What is your number one highlight from broadcasting or commentating golf?
No, honestly, I don't have highlights. I only have lowlights. There's a lot of truth into when you can't play anymore, you pick up the microphone. Personally, I prefer live golf because, you know, there's a bit of Walter Mitty still left in me where, you know, you wish you're inside the ropes. So you're trying to imagine what they're doing. The studio shows, they're not, you know, I enjoy them, but they're not as my favorites like live golf is. And I think, you know, all you're trying to do is bridge that gap for the viewer on what the guys of today are doing. You know, I appreciate the history of the game, but I'm not a great historian with golf because I had the same attitude when I played. It's what can you do today? What are you going to improve for tomorrow? So I have the same ideology when it comes to broadcasting. It's what do I got to improve for tomorrow? So yeah, it's more like when you screw up a show, when you make a mistake, those type of things. That's the thing. But yeah, there's a lot of good people. To be honest, the best people, and it would be the same in what you guys do. It's the people that behind the camera that people don't see. They're there. They work twice as long as I do. They probably work a damn sight harder than I do. And they're actually they're really good people, and nobody ever gets to see that. But they're the reason why the show gets on the air. They actually provide the energy too.
It's true. There are massive amounts of crews and effort and work that go into, you know, everything that faces people and that people see.
Frank's being too hard on himself though. He's great at this TV thing.
Very, very good at the TV thing. Very good, Frank. Yeah, you don't give yourself enough credit, pal.
No, I'm fortunate. I realize that, but I work, you know, I work in a lot of different environments and I've worked with a lot of different people. You know, for example, you know, the live from, you know, it's Brannell Chamblee and Rich Leonard tonight. It's a different show. We're trying to, and we'll be on like every night, obviously, this week. And you're trying to surmise the day. The crew that are working in the morning that are trying to imagine what the day might have, you know, so it's a different type of show. And then live golf itself, you know, when you get to cover, I'll be doing a little bit of that as well. You do get spoiled, but your mind's constantly racing, as mine is already, trying to prepare for live golf. You know, your mind always has to go forward, just like when I play golf. You know, trying to be the athlete. No matter how good you play today or how poorly you played, like what do I got to do tomorrow? I've only got 24 hours, or I only got to sleep. I got to fix that. So I still have that same attitude. That's all. I think when that stops, then I'll stop doing this as well, like I did golf.
Well, it's a great attitude you have, and you're one of the best in the business. So our last question we'll ask you, you know, you've been out there for a couple of days now. Everybody's talking about the condition of the course, how difficult Carnoustie can be. I believe in 99, you know, it was 6 over par, got those guys in a playoff. I think Padraig Harrington and Sergio are around 7 under. What type of scoring do you predict we'll see this week at Carnoustie?
Well, that's a very fair question. The fairest answer is I don't know yet. I'm curious. I got to see more, to be honest, first, and the forecast. If they keep the greens the way they are at the moment, which is receptive, they will shoot lower this week than what everybody else is predicting at the moment, because these guys, they really are that good, and it's tough to defend. If the greens start to get firmer, and then they start to push flags closer to the edges of the green, then all of a sudden we get the Carnoustie. 99 you referred to, only a third of the play. You know, I know I finished in the top 20, but it was 29 guys that broke 300. That means two-thirds of the field did not average better than 75 a day. The quality of this field, it won't be like that. I got to think past 71. You know, I think there's no question under par wins this year. If we get moderately good conditions, I can see easily double digits winning.
Well, it'll be very, very fun to watch. Yeah. Frank Navlo, yeah. you're one of the best in the business. We really appreciate you taking the time. Everybody can catch Frank on Golf Channel's Live From coverage all week. And have fun at Carnoustie, my friend.
Will do. I will not retire my bar stool.
Maybe throw on an eye patch for one of these TV segments for the Pirate.
No promises, but I'll try. I'll see you, Jeff, and sort that out, okay?
All right. Thank you, sir. Yeah, have a good one.
Thanks, Frank.
We appreciate it.
Hey, enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
A huge thank you to Frank Navlo for jumping on with us. He's obviously very busy. He's over in Scotland. He's at Carnoustie. Huge week for him. Major championship week. He's a golf analyst. All that good stuff. Next up, we've got our fantasy sports, fantasy golf, golf picks guru, my guy Randy. It's the first time on the show. Look, we want to take a little bit deeper dive into picks, into fantasy sports, into fantasy golf. That's huge. I know that that's there's a big demand for that. The people out there, they want that. We usually don't get that in depth into, like I said, different picks, why we like certain guys certain weeks. We usually keep it pretty light. But this is a major championship week, so what better time to debut my buddy Randy and get into some nuts and bolts and have fun, why he likes certain guys, why we don't like other guys, all that good stuff. Before we get to that, speaking of picks, BetDSI.com, they've been in business for over 20 years paying out winners. There's nothing better than making some picks and rooting for those guys all week. If you can't do the daily fantasy thing, or if you want to do both, you get to BetDSI.com. They are A-plus rated on sports book review sites. Use your sports knowledge to make some extra cash. Easy to use mobile playing interface. You play, you win, you get paid. It's very easy. It's very awesome. BetDSI offers odds on everything, football, golf, anything you can imagine, baseball that's going on right now, All-Star game, all that good stuff, including live betting. They got live bullets, prop bets. Everybody loves prop bets. BetDSI offers odds on pretty much everything else you can imagine as well. Major sports, politics, reality TV, you name it, they got it. Here's what you guys do. Use the promo code 4play25, all one word, FOREPLAY25. Get a $25 free wager just for registering. If you decide to deposit, which you will because you're smart, you want to win a bunch of money gambling, you get a 200% bonus match on your money. I play there myself. I recommend BetDSI. .com more than anything if you want to add a little excitement to the games you are watching. Once again, go to BetDSI.com, use promo code 4play25, get a free $25 wager on the house and a 200% extra bonus when you deposit. That's 4play25 to get your free wager and start winning today. Next up, we got my pal Randy. Let's get into some picks. Let's get into some nuts and bolts. Let's talk about the field. Let's do this. All right, we are going to talk some daily fantasy sports. We have on a very special guest, Randy.
What's up, Briggsy?
Randy, welcome to the podcast. So you and I, a little background, you and I talk, well, I would say you talk daily fantasy sports to me all the time.
I do.
And I'm not as into it as you. Mm-hmm. But many, many, many people out there are, and they love it, and I'm trying to get more into it.
It's a big week for daily fantasy golf.
It's a big fucking week.
It's a big week.
It's a huge week.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, we've obviously got the two big ones, DraftKings, FanDuel. That's what pretty much everybody's using. They got huge tournaments. We're not going to mention them specifically, until they pay us money to do so. So we're going to talk about them very generally. People are going to know what we're talking about. Let me start with this.
Okay.
So this is my process, and I was doing it earlier today. I was going through, the lineups, trying to set some lineups. What I do is I scroll through like the first seven or eight names. Yeah. And then in my head, I say,
I got to stop you, though.
Okay.
How are your names sorted? By salary?
Yep.
Okay.
By salary. So I scroll through like the first seven or eight names, and then I get very excited at every single one that I see. And then I try to decide, I go like the first one that I pick, I say nope, because there's no chance it's going to be the first one. It's almost like a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Like you get the second cheapest.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I do it. I go,
that's not a bad move. That's a pretty good move.
That's not horrific?
No, it's not bad.
Okay.
And we'll talk about it. But one of the big problems with doing with the process being the way you're talking about it is that everyone does it like that, right? So you end up producing the same lineup as everybody in the tournament.
Which is exactly what you don't want to do.
No. Especially if you're playing in big tournaments. You know, there's a big tournament this weekend with a big cash prize on one of the sites.
Yep.
You know,
huge cash prize on one of the sites.
Huge.
Large tournament that you can play in daily fantasy sports.
Right. So the problem with that is the good plays are not the best plays because everyone plays them, right? You need to find the plays that are good plays that are unique. Contrarian is what they say in the biz.
So you're trying to essentially, right, I think a lot of people know this on the whole, but they don't really know the nuts and bolts of it. It's like you're basically trying to pick the best player that no one else is picking.
Yeah, the best player. And not only that, but, you know, you get six guys to fill out, right? So if just because somebody's popular doesn't mean they're bad, but make sure to pair them with a less popular player so that combination is not.
Do you do that? Do you look in pairs?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm setting up guys based on salary, based on exposure. And by exposure, I'm talking about field exposure.
Right.
How highly owned is this player in the field?
And how are we measuring that?
It's online. You just Google it. So this weekend, look up British Open ownership exposure, DraftKings, FanDuel, whatever you want.
Okay.
And you can find that for free usually.
Okay, and then you also, I mean, are you
are those numbers that they come from, right? Because they don't have real time data, do they?
No, there
are coming off of like tendencies from.
Yeah, so there are a couple good ones out there that essentially just kind of like scrape the internet
right.
for touts and people talking about certain players, and then have gotten pretty good at guessing to kind of a shocking degree of accuracy how highly owned a player will be.
Because for me, right, like I looked at Spieth, okay, mm-hmm. and Spieth is on DraftKings, he's third most.
What is Spieth?
Or third highest.
What does he cost on DraftKings?
He was 10,600 on DraftKings.
10,600.
But then on FanDuel, he was like 7th or 8th in yep. price. So what I started
That's
doing...
That's a good way to look at it, is the rank of salary, right?
Cause, right.
You know, right, because so, you got to be thinking about it. The different sites are going to value these players differently. So one of the great ways to find value plays are look at nothing besides what are they priced on the sites vis-a-vis each other, right?
Comparatively on the sites.
Comparatively on the sites, right? So
are you looking for like a big difference there?
Yeah, I'm looking for a big difference. I'm looking for Paul Casey is a great example this week. I'm looking at Paul Casey. He is, let's see what he is. He is 11,000. He's comparably priced with Jason Day on FanDuel.
Okay.
And he's comparably priced with Mark Leishman on DraftKings.
Interesting.
That's a big difference.
Huge difference, especially because
we're talking about the number 8 player in the world in Jason Day. And no disrespect to Mark Leishman, you'll find out later. I like Mark Leishman a lot this week, but he's not Jason Day.
Right. And right. we had Brandel Chambly on like last year, he said Paul Casey was one of his greatest examples of someone who will just never win over the weekend because he has all the statistics to prove that he just can't perform on the weekend.
I lost a bet to one of our good buddies over Paul Casey's win earlier this year. I think it was
the Valspar when he beat Tiger.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I said, this guy's going to finish second. He finished second every time.
That was the one time it kind of backfired.
He's what you'll call a cash play, not a tournament play.
Paul Casey?
Yeah, because we're looking for like reliability in cash.
Right.
We want as many top 10s. We don't care who wins really in cash. We just want a lot of top 10s. In tournaments, we're going to need 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 to win.
Because you got to beat a gigantic field.
Yeah, you got to buy. Yeah, exactly. That's right.
So another guy, I mean, we got to talk. Let's just get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Tiger.
Yeah, let's talk about Tiger.
Is Tiger just a horrible fantasy golf pick?
No. He's not a horrible fan.
Because I know, like, right? Because he gets terrible odds when you're trying to pick somebody to win just on normal betting sites. Shout out to BetDSI.com because everybody picks him, so his odds are like half of what they should be.
Yeah, but daily fantasy sites don't have to deal with that. They don't have – their exposure is not the same as a book, right? Like, the exposure of a daily fantasy site's book doesn't matter to them. If every player in the tournament picks him, they don't care. Right, it's not like they have extra exposure if everyone picks him and Tiger wins. So they actually – especially in the majors, because, listen, these sites are trying to get people to play, and
right.
they know people like Tiger, so they always price Tiger competitively so you can fit him on every team you
so
want.
So your excitement level is that much higher.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean I think he's a bad pick. I'm gonna give you a trend that I've noticed this week.
Okay.
This is open prep trend.
Okay.
5 of the past 7 open winners are 40 years old or older.
Which is crazy.
Think about that for a second. And so 2016, we got Stenson at Royal Birkdale. 2015, we got Zach Johnson, St. Andrews. 2013, we got Phil at Muirfield. Ernie Els, Darren Clark, okay? If Cooch doesn't get caught by Spieth, we're talking about 6 of 7 of the last Open Championships won by dudes who are 40 years old or older. And who's 40 on tour right now in this tournament? You know, we're talking Casey, Tiger, Kuchar, Phil, Sergio, Ian Poulter, Zach Johnson. That's not a group of guys that's going to be super popular.
I don't want to pump your tires, but we just had Frank Nablo on, and he said the same exact thing, made the same point.
These dudes, there's something about the Open Championship that it requires experience, and it's not the same kind of experience that – it's not the grinder that you're looking for in a U.S. Open where, like,
right.
can this dude just survive the week? We're talking about he's short-sighted. You know, he's got to kind of hit one of these weird little
shots. He knows the wind's
going to
change. It's going to change
yeah,
the whole golf course.
Like long lag putting shit. In the wind. Shit right. that you just cannot really develop without a lot of years under your belt.
So you mentioned Mark Leishman.
I did.
He's always been an anomaly for me.
Yeah.
He's gone deep in some British. Was it at the old course?
Yeah.
I think that he lost in a playoff. I think that might be right. But anyways, he's a guy that...
So yeah, he lost in the playoffs to Zach Johnson.
Yeah, he's at eight. Yeah, it was a three-man playoff. I think it was Louis Tazen, ZJ, and Leishman.
And Leishman was like sneaking in there. He wasn't even on TV until he was on the playoff.
Right, they never put him on TV.
I know.
And that's another reason I almost feel like if he's one of these value play things that we're talking about, because...
Leishman checks a lot of boxes.
He's only $8,000 on DraftKings.
Yep.
And they never show him on TV, so nobody knows who the fuck he is.
Yep.
But he's phenomenal.
These are dudes we're looking at. And, like, talk about process for a second. You know, it doesn't take very much time to change your approach to building daily fantasy golf lineups from a total schmuck approach that's definitely going to get beat almost all the time to a little bit more advanced approach. You don't have to be a straight pro to figure it out. You just got to look at the tournament, try to figure out some key stats that have correlated with success either at that course or in that kind of tournament, and then just look and find out who are the dudes who are well set up
so
to succeed.
That was what I was going to ask you. It's like, okay, since we're at Carnoustie, it's such a unique test.
Mm-hmm.
Two-part question. One, is this like the hardest tournament to cap of the year?
It absolutely is the hardest tournament to cap of the year. And there's a couple reasons, for it. Number one is we're talking about a huge weather week. We're talking about a week where half of the field could legitimately be cut out of the tournament.
Right.
By no fault of their own. They get the wrong side of the draw and they are screwed. And so,
which we love, by the way, which is awesome.
It's great.
The Carnage.
Makes good TV, you know, it's a tough lineup.
So
that's why one of the things that you can do to build better lineups in golf DFS is weather stack. And by weather stack, what I'm talking about is look at the draw. And sometimes you can't predict who's going to get the better side of the draw. It looks right now, I look at, you know, windfinder.com is a great place to go. You go to windfinder.com, you type in
windfinder.com.
Oh yeah.
That's amazing. How did I not know about
that? It's like a surfer thing, I think. I honestly think it's like made for waves and surfing.
Yeah, it's got
to
be.
Yeah, but windfinder.com, you type in Carnoustie, you'll get what I find to be the most accurate wind forecast that you can find on the internet, right? And looking right now, it looks like early Friday, late Saturday is going to be the better side of the draw. It looks like.
You mean early? Because
I'm sorry.
Early
Thursday, late Friday. Okay. That's right. It looks like we're going to have maybe like some dead wind for like first guys out, first seven or eight groups out. They're going to play the golf course on Thursday in relatively low winds. And then on Friday, the winds are going to be up all day if the forecast, and again, the forecast can change
in a second. It's Monday night that we're doing this, so anything could change.
Right now, it looks like that's the better side of the draw. And here's my point about stacking on weather. Even if it's not, you should always organize your lineups in a way that if this lineup gets the good draw, I'm going to get the max advantage out of it, right? So this weekend, I'm going to put in lineups that are all guys from that draw, that are all guys from the other draw. Like, I want to be in a spot that if the weather breaks a certain way, I'm covered.
Because you're not trying to make sure you're mediocre. You're trying to make sure you just...
Oh, dude.
You just go ham. Like,
mediocre?
Your team's all or nothing.
Mediocre is the enemy of tournament DFS, right? Like, you'll just lose all your money if you try to build lineups that are okay.
Right.
You got to build lineups that are going to finish first, or Ricky Bobby last. Like, it's going to be bad.
So the second part of my question is, what factors are you looking at to try to figure out who is going to be good on a Lynx golf course?
Yeah.
Because, you know, 2 years ago, we've got who the hell could possibly predict Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson. I think Phil beat the second-place guy by, like, 10 shots. The third-place guy by, like, 2.
I can.
Why? How? Yeah.
So if we're looking at Lynx golf, you know, a lot of courses, like the first place we start talking about stats is this a bomber's course or is this – we're talking about tee shots usually.
Yeah. Is this target golf or is it bomber's paradise?
Yeah, it's like is this an accuracy course or is it a bomber's course? Here, it's both, right? Like you got to be long, you got to be accurate, although I don't know if you saw Snedeker's Twitter today. He's hitting it 430 out there.
Yeah.
Right now.
Little Weasley Sneds is pounding it.
So it appears that, you know, maybe everyone's a bomber this week. But – Scrambling. Because, so, besides 2011, 2012, I think it's Clark and Ernie Els who kind of had mediocre scrambling performances over the course of the Open. The five winners since those guys have ranked first, fourth, second, fourth, first, and first in scrambling for the week.
Jesus.
This is a place, Carnoustie and other open venues, that you're going to hit good shots that miss the green. And you got to get up and down, whether it's a par five and you're making a birdie out of it, or you're just saving a par or even preventing a double. Getting up and down is the number one skill of the week.
Last year, Spieth was probably the most famous bogey save of all time.
Yeah, all that shit.
On, like, what was it, 13, 14,
and
whatever.
Phil and Stenson, if you look back on that match and you kind of think about what the moments were, they were all little shots around the green that Phil was doing Phil stuff, and Stenson was kind of not putting it tight, but ended up making a bunch of 15-foot putts. Yeah, for sure. But, like, that's captured in, like, strokes gained scrambling. Strokes around the green, I guess, is the scrambling stat.
Right.
Strokes gained around the green. So everyone in my player pool this week, in a player pool, is just like, if I'm going to enter maybe, I don't know, 100 lineups in a weekend, I'm going to have 20 guys in my pool just assembled 100 different ways. And if you're going to have five guys, if you're going to put in five lineups, you should have no more than 8 or 9 players on those lineups.
Okay, and you just assemble them based on the draw, based on different pairings and what you mentioned earlier.
Based on the draw, based on and the draw is not just which side of it are you on. You got to assemble, okay, if this gets ugly, let's put all the guys who are going to score, if it's ugly, on the same lineup. And then, so this is the thing, like, Zach Johnson and Justin Thomas should, like, never be on the same lineup because they don't win the same kind of golf tournament, right? Like, Justin Thomas wins when they go low. Like, he has to go lights out. It's got to be 18, 19 under par, and he's going to win the golf tournament, right? But, like, Zach Johnson's a plotter. He's gonna win tournaments that, you know, it's one under, even par.
Right, I think he was the one Augusta exception in the last, like, 20 years where he was, like, over par when he won at Augusta.
Right, so, like, you got to think about that for a second. You got to look at your lineup, and you got to always ask yourself the question, is there a world where all of these guys do well in the same week? Right, and you try to maximize that as much as you can.
Right.
Right.
Okay, so let's get into let's close this out with some sort of picks.
Yeah, picks.
You know, I guess let's start with a sleeper. Let's start with a name who, you know, people are going to scroll right past. Maybe the middle of the pack. Maybe they're at, you know, whatever, an average price, if we'll call it that, mediocre guy who we like this week.
There's a couple. I'll give you one. This week, I'm looking at Russell Knox to have a big week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Russell Knox.
He's playing the best golf of his life right now. He seems to have sorted some stuff out. He's playing good. I'm looking at my rankings right now. I have Russell Knox hanging out as my, let's see. Sorry, I got to look this.
No, give it a look. We want to make sure we're giving the people the proper information here.
He's number 10 in of all players this week for me.
Really?
He's number 10 of all players this week for me. Coming in.
So that's got to be a high value because
Russell Knox to me is the best value in the tournament.
Wow.
I'm looking at his form is good. He's in, you know, he has not performed well at Opens. That's what people will tell you, is that, like, this guy is not a guy who's kind of done it before.
Right.
But he hasn't played this kind of golf before either. Right. So he's trending. Probably better than anybody else. His stats are not only good, but they're also going in the right way.
Okay.
He kind of grades out on the scrambling metric that we talked about, especially recently. So Russell Knox, I think he's 9,000 on FanDuel, closer to 7,700 on DraftKings.
Okay.
That's a guy who can allow you to fit in two big names.
Right. He gives you a little bit of space.
And if this is the John Deere Classic last week, we're going even lower than that. But generally speaking, in majors, the pricing is soft. And when I say that, I mean that it's not hard to put a lot of good players on lineups that you don't need to go super, super deep to make good lineups.
Gotcha.
Russell Knox might be kind of the lowest I'm going to go salary-wise this week.
And we say that, you probably say that for a couple reasons, because one, it's a major, so, like, very, very – they're going to be a decently established player if they're going to win a major.
Usually. I mean, like, listen, man, Danny Willett can find his way into a green jacket every once in a while, but he also had to play well that week. So, yeah, typically speaking, like, you're not going to see me with anybody priced lower than 7,500 on DraftKings, 8,700 on FanDuel. The other one I like, and I got to drop it because I love him, is Jason Duffner.
Duff Daddy.
Yeah, Duff Daddy. Here's the thing about Duffner. His pursuit of the Ben Hogan career is well documented, right? He loves Ben Hogan. It's like he
had him as like his profile picture for a while.
And he still does. I legit think he still does. Carnoustie is Hogan's alley, right? Like, this is an important tournament for Duff. And if you look at his Open record and even his major championship record, it's better than you think it is. It's pretty good. He can't putt.
He just can't. I almost fall out of my chair with like secondhand like uncomfortableness every time he putts like something inside of 5 feet. It's terrifying.
It really is. He's one of those guys that's on your lineup and you hate yourself for having him on your lineup.
Yeah. So I did looked up, according to my calculations, and that means just scrolling through Wikipedia. Zach Johnson is the only player to win the Masters at over par since 1956.
That's insane.
Isn't that crazy?
That's absolutely
So, yeah, you were pretty spot on there. Okay, so.
You want to talk about the big dogs?
Yeah.
Everybody, because that's the hardest thing that you do is which big dog, right?
Which big dog or which couple big dogs are we liking versus the others?
So you got to keep an eye. Again, we're taping this on Monday. The Stenson injury news is, you know, he dropped out of the tournament last week. Everyone on you know, kind of golf DFS Twitter was saying that he's okay. He's just doing stents and stuff. He's dropping out to get ready for the Open. But it's come up in the last little while that maybe it's more legit than that. So check out Stenson. If it seems that he's actually healthy, it's tough to argue with him at the Open Championship. The guy stripes a ball. He's uber accurate with that three wood. And he scrambles differently. He puts a lot of balls to 15 feet and then makes the putt, it seems like.
Yeah, it's also, you're right, with that three wood, right? Like, he doesn't need, he can play the entire golf course without a driver.
And he necessarily flights the ball.
And
over.
He has the best three wood in the world. That's so right. So that's pretty good.
Like, Phil is trying to figure out how to play like Stenson in the
this
Open
one week a
yeah,
year, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Stenson's game's built for it. So he's a guy, and also pretty fairly priced. You know, he's not above 10,000 on DraftKings. So you're talking, 10,000 is kind of like, we're talking studs now.
Yeah.
And so Stenson is more kind of priced with, like, he's cheaper than Francesco Molinari this week.
Wow.
Yeah.
So again, it really comes down to.
Molinari's playing great, but.
Still. Yeah. He's Molinari. We're talking about Stenson. So it comes down to your comfort level with how healthy do you think Stenson is?
Yeah. And that's hard to say, but of all communities on Twitter, DFS Golf is pretty active. And you just Google Stenson injury and you'll be able to find a pretty reliable piece
the
of
DFS
information.
Golf.
Yeah. Like somebody's in his training room, like tweeting it out somewhere.
So other top dogs.
So Stenson, I also like Patrick Reed again quite a bit.
I was looking at him. I was surprised at what he was priced. I mean, on DraftKings, he was like 8,400.
Yeah, I know. We saw this. We saw this with a couple other guys before in their careers. When after they break through, they just come on. Like, they're not going anywhere. Right.
He almost won the fucking U.S. Open. Like, people forget that.
Yeah, I know. It's insane. But the guy can play again. You worry about the high draw in the wind, but you know, he's a guy who's got a hell of a lot of heart to him, and that's kind of what you need to win one of these grindy ones. So I like that, and we've seen it before. His putter can just go unconscious.
Yeah, and he was one of those guys. I mean, he was dragging his balls before he won, and now he won the Masters.
That's right. You want to talk about the difference between a cash play and a tournament play? Patrick Reed is a tournament play all the way because, you know, he might just, like, make 7 birdies in a row.
Right.
He's shown that he can do it in majors, on hard golf courses, pretty much in any circumstances possible. This guy can just go white hot.
I feel like every big tournament I watch, like every other big tournament I watch, they are like, oh, we're going to cut to Patrick Reed, who's putting for his 6th birdie in a row.
Yep, that's right.
They do that all the time.
And then the one other guy you got to mention, because he's a course record holder at Carnoustie, is Tommy Fleetwood.
Wow, the Dunhill Links.
Dunhill Links. He's 63 tournament round. It was set up differently. It was set up, you know, there were amateurs in the tournament.
Still
so
good juju there.
63, it's a low number on a course like that. So you got to look at him. He has not been playing that great. But, again, to me, Fleetwood, I think of in the same breath as a guy who's won a major, even though he hasn't. Like, it's totally undeserved at this point, but he just kind of has that vibe about
and
him.
And his finish at Shinnecock
was crazy.
I mean, he did everything he could to win
that finish
Shinnecock.
At Shinnecock won a bunch of people a lot of money on DFS because, like, man, if you had him and he was way out on Sunday morning, you were way out.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, boom, he's there, and he made a bajillion birdies on the way there, and that's how you score.
And it shows he's got the cojones. I mean, he came into Sunday of a major championship, the U.S. Open, and fired off just an insane, what did he shoot, 63?
Yeah.
I think he shot 63.
He likes 63.
He really likes 63. Are there any other big dogs, any other picks that you got to get out there for the people?
Yeah, so I'm a little wary to give you more big dogs because I should have touched on this earlier. I think this is a balanced lineup type week.
Okay.
Right? Like, I don't think you're trying to bend over. Listen, DJ might go out and win the tournament.
Right.
But I don't think it's such a lock that he wins a tournament that it's worth paying his price for what else you have to do on the bottom of your lineup.
Gotcha.
So I think that, like, you can start a good lineup with Ricky Fowler or Fleetwood, and then what that allows you to do is you get to put in, like, an Alex Noren as opposed to, like, a Patrick Cantlay, and that's better, I think, right? Like, you can – the middle of your lineup gets upgraded the lower your highest end guy is. Obviously, it's just math. Right. So,
and you think this is one of those weeks to give yourself some more room?
Yeah, throughout. If I'm on DraftKings this week, I don't think I'm crossing the 10,200 bear. I think Justin Rose might be like the highest salary guy I'll use.
I like Justin Rose a lot this week.
Yeah, it's hard not to. But again, he's like the most boring DFS pick ever because he's just going to finish fifth and that's what's going to happen.
Yeah,
but yeah, Alex Norton's another one. He's like Tommy Fleetwood light. Right?
Yeah,
light. Yeah,
the light version.
The light version of Tommy Fleetwood. It's yeah. There's a couple other guys, but again, we're looking for experience. We're looking for certainly Link's experience. So that's where a guy like Fleetwood doesn't have to meet our 40 year old criteria because he's just born in Lynx golf and he's just comfortable doing it. So yeah, there's that. And then, like, listen, it's the Open. Like, you got to look at Louis. You got to look at Phil. Seems like he's off the rails this year. I don't think I'm going to use Phil at all. Full fade on Phil.
Big fade on Phil.
Full fade on Phil.
Did you see a stinger he was hitting last week?
I don't care. I think the guy's just wound so tight. He won in Mexico, right? It got set up kind of in the context of the Tiger comeback that, holy shit, we might be living in a world in 2018 where Tiger, Phil, and all the spring break boys are going to contend for major championships. And I think Phil just got so horny over this prospect that he
lost his mind.
He's done.
He started hitting balls while they're moving. He started giving crazy answers. Then he took another penalty last week.
Not a bad move this week to hit your ball moving.
Oh, yeah, based on the rule that he –
well, based on the rule that he,
yeah.
Especially if it's going to be baked out.
Just save yourself. Take the unplayable.
Yeah, I know. You better be wearing some pretty quick golf shoes to run across the screen.
Because otherwise you're going to slip and slide. You're going to roll. You might trundle down the hill yourself.
You need some speed.
All right, Randy. We appreciate it. Hopefully some people out there. We make some millionaires. I know you're going to have 8 million lineups out there.
100
lineups. Randy, we appreciate it. A lot of good knowledge.
Appreciate it, bud.
Let's enjoy a good week. All right, folks, hope you enjoyed the show. We threw a lot at you. Major championship week, that's how we roll. Enjoy the British Open. Reminder, we will be back Thursday, a whole nother show, a lot to talk about. There's always tons to talk about in the world of golf, especially major championship weeks. Enjoy the British. Enjoy Carnoustie. We'll talk to you again Thursday. Hit it hard.
'Cause I've won and lost against the best. This old road's been a hell of a test. I'm still driving, I ain't slowing down. There's rules I'd love to break and bend, mistakes I've made again and again. But I tell you this, my friends, I'm still around. I hit it hard, man. So far, man. No laying up, no holding back. Ain't afraid. It's a natural fact. I hit it long, man. Long. Till it's gone, man. Long. Keep taking chances, living large. I hit it, hit it, hit it hard. Yeah,
would have given up by now. All the rough I've seen, these ups and downs, somehow I just keep on playing through. So all you critics, pull up a chair at the winner's circle soon. I'll be there with a high five and a smile for you. Hit it hard, man. Trying to tell me how to live my life. These lawyers and strings spending money like my ex-wives. Sure, I gamble and I drink and smoke three packs a day. Hell, ain't country music supposed to be this way? It's from the heart, man. I hit it hard, man. So far, man. I hit it hard, I hit it, I hit it, I hit it hard. I hit it hard, man. So far, man. So far. No laying up, no holding back. Ain't afraid of nothing, it's a natural fact. I hit it long, man. Till it's gone, man. Keep taking chances, living large. I hit it, I hit it, I hit it hard. I'll keep hitting it hard, man. How about you?